This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here as we cover a lot of things of interest around the Umpqua Valley. All the talk today, of course, a lot of people from both sides of the aisle weighing in on the update on the federal government shutdown. We're going to talk about that first. In a moment, though, I want to kind of switch gears with Congressman Cliff Bentz. And I know there's been some developments regarding a state veterans home in Roseburg and whether it made a cut on a list or whether it didn't. Congressman, thanks for being here.
Oh, great to be with you, Kyle. Thanks for the opportunity.
So talk about the update, because in this CR, as I understand correctly, there was some funding for some veteran homes, some places, and give us an update on whether or not Roseburg made the list.
Well, my understanding is, and I have not seen the detail yet, although I've asked my team to get it for me, but my understanding is that 8 of the 80 homes that are on the list were funded, unfortunately, were at the bottom of the list. And so the top 8 got the funding. Now, this is what I've been told. I've not seen it in writing, so we're waiting for that written summary to be provided to us about where those 8 projects were on this list of 80 homes across the nation. And so I'm very sorry for that, but when you're at the bottom of the list, it's hard to get people above you to switch places. So when I spoke with the head of the ODVA, the Department of Veterans Affairs, several times, I said, how can we possibly move up the list? And she said, well, you can't. You have to figure out how to get more money used for these homes. I said, how much is it going to take to pay for all 80? And she goes, about $1.5 billion. And the amount of money that was available when I had that conversation 2 months ago was closer to $200 million. And so we'll try to have all those details for our next call. I don't have them yet. As you know, we just passed this last night. but we're still looking through it. The bill is about 300 pages long. I've read through it a couple of times. I will tell you about 30 of it has to do with the 30 pages. Of the bill has to do with the reopening of the government, and the rest is our 3 appropriation packages, one of which is veterans. So anyway, when we have the answer, which we will have before our next conversation, I'll be able to give you more detail. But right now, my understanding is we're not one of the 8.
All right, we'll check back and watch your updates. So for the shutdown, what are your overall thoughts on the last many weeks of this shutdown and then getting the government moving again?
Well, my thoughts are, what an incredible waste of time that was created by the Democrats, frankly, both in the House and in the Senate, refusing to vote to keep the government open. Because, as we've discussed, the bill I voted on back on September 19th, I think, somewhere in that space, was to keep the government open until November 21st. And then when we got the bill out of the House, thank goodness, with, I think, 1 Democrat vote, joining all of we Republicans except for 1 or 2, and it went to the Senate, where it sat and waited 40-some-odd days, and Leader Thune over in the Senate on the Republican side, Republican Leader Thune, called 14 separate votes trying to get the 8 Democrats that we needed to vote with the Republicans, or most of them. And they would not. They kept voting over the Democrats over and over and over again not to fund the government. So they were holding out for a number of things, but ultimately 8 of the Democrats joined 52 of the Republicans and passed out the bill. And you might ask, what did they get for it? And the answer is not much more than that which had been offered, and maybe even a little less than what had been offered weeks ago. So what a huge waste of time and money and a lot of people put in difficult positions, particularly those that didn't get paid and still won't get paid, Kyle, until next week. So it's really, you have to ask, what in the world were the Democrats thinking?
What do you think caused several of those Democrats to change their votes?
Well, I think they looked at how much damage was being done, particularly when it comes to the danger people are being put in as they try to fly around the United States, because the folks making sure that you're not going to crash into another plane while you're up in the air have really, really difficult jobs, and they weren't getting paid. And so after a couple of pay periods go by and you're not getting paid and still being asked to do really, really stressful and tough work, you start not showing up. And that means less people to control the traffic in the sky. And I think the eight senators, the eight brave Democrat senators that joined almost all of we Republicans, said, wait a minute, this is ridiculous. We can't sit here forever and leave our flights being shut down and canceled right and left and people being put at risk. And they also saw the SNAP benefits, food stamps running out. And they said, we can't have people going hungry. This is, and literally hundreds of thousands of millions of people rely on these food stamp programs. Also, I think they realize that grocery stores, especially small ones, are hugely reliant upon food stamp revenue to help stay open. And so they realized they couldn't allow that to happen. They also saw, and I heard this as I traveled around the district, different people that had different projects going on. For example, big projects that require some sort of a permit were being stalled out and stopped because they couldn't get federal permits, because those federal employees were not deemed essential, and so they weren't at work. They were told to go home and put on furlough as they waited for the government to reopen. So this had an absolutely shocking impact on getting stuff done, getting things built, getting permits issued. So those eight Democrats finally said after 40 days that this is enough, and they put together a deal, and that bill then came out of the Senate, thank goodness, and came back to the House, and we voted on it last night, and it passed 222 yes votes to 209 no votes. You know, six Democrats came across the aisle and joined us, and two Republicans went the other direction for their reasons. But when it got passed and the government's reopened, it's reopened until January 30th. So it's not as though it's permanent. That's not the case. And so I'm just hoping that we'll be able to get our nine remaining appropriation bills passed between now and January 30th. We passed three inside the bill last night. Three appropriation bills were included in what we passed last night. We have nine more to go, and if we get those done, we won't need it. We won't need another continuing resolution. We'll have the budget put in place until September 30th. Oh, and by the way, Kyle, people might say, well, why does it take you guys so long to put together your appropriation bills? And the short answer is because we promised that when we took over, we would do these appropriation bills through what's called regular order. And that means that we hold hearings on each of these bills. And that those hearings, they're complicated. And everybody gets to argue and shout and yell in the appropriation committees. There are 12 of them over what to include and what not. But it takes time. And so, yes, we have those three that we just got passed, but we have nine more to go. Most of the work's been done on them. And it's my hope that they will all get passed. And by the way, we have not done 12 separate appropriation bills since 1969. That's how hard it is. And so this is good news for many, many reasons. But if people wonder why it takes so long, it's because we're trying to do it right.
Now, restarting federal services, I mean, obviously, it's not like just flipping a switch. What are the next few days going to be like as the sort of, I guess, what you might call a gradual reopening?
Well, the question is how to get the money back into various accounts and then distribute it out to the places where it should have been a month and a half, almost 2 months ago. And so, for example, SNAP benefits or food stamp benefits, that money is going to be sent to the states because the states are in charge of distributing that money. In Oregon, The governor stepped up last Friday and reached into state coffers and took enough money to fully fund SNAP in Oregon for the balance of this month. And then now they'll have to work out the confusion of reimbursing the state of Oregon for that which it advanced, and try to figure out how to make sure everybody comes out whole. But that's going to be good news for people in the state of Oregon that are on SNAP. What it means is, though, that people in the state of Oregon missed 1 week of a SNAP benefits, 1 week, November 1st through November 7th. And that, thank goodness, was only a week. And during that week, if you were without food, you would have turned to food banks to help, or you would have, if you're a student, if you're from kindergarten up to 18, you would have turned to the school lunch program, which remained intact and providing food for people that didn't otherwise have it. And so then the military will now get guaranteed paid, as opposed to the president having to scrounge around through the sofa cushions to find money to pay the military, which he did. And of course, the people that are provide security here at the Capitol, and people on the border, Border Patrol, and other federal employees, well, air traffic controllers, they will all be paid on Tuesday of next week. That's the plan.
Now, I've talked to a number of people here just around Roseburg in the last couple of weeks. People ask me questions, thinking maybe I know more than I know about this process sometimes. But from either side of the aisle, some Republicans, some Democrats, progressives, conservatives, whatever, the people I talked to, everybody was asking, how do we make sure this doesn't ever happen again? What are your thoughts?
Well, there are bills which I think anybody that should be brought right now that say you can't use shutting down the government as political leverage, which is exactly what the Democrats were doing, holding the nation hostage in order to try to get something they didn't have enough votes for. And so just as an aside, taking the government hostage is not the Democrat way of doing things, particularly when you look at the Senate and you realize that the Democrats in the Senate have seven of the votes that are needed to get to the 60 number, 60, to get a bill like this passed. And they have the power to stop stuff already. So why they had to resort to, they have leverage is my point. They didn't need to resort to shutting down the government and putting so many people at risk and extraordinary inconvenience and unbelievable costs. They were thinking the average, guess of how much money we were losing each week is $13 to $15 billion off our GDP. But there's a bill or bills that have been proposed to try to prevent this from happening again. It's complicated as usual because it involves money. But I'm sure after this exercise, we'll all be looking at those more carefully.
Now, the president talked about the idea of abandoning the filibuster. And again, on both sides of the aisle, some people thought that was a good idea, but some thought that it could bite you later if the other party's in charge. What do you think on the filibuster?
Well, I absolutely believe in the filibuster, and I do not want it done away with. I thought that was certainly something I disagree with the president on, and that's because at some point in the future, the other party is going to control the Senate, and I don't want to see 51 votes being the amount that's necessary, only necessary for most situations. The reason for the 60 votes is to make it more likely that you have to have agreement on things as opposed to just jamming things through with a bare majority. And so, by the way, to the extent that you can get bipartisan agreement, it's much more likely whatever you're doing is going to stick. If you're trying to jam things through without a majority, then you can just about guarantee that when the other party takes over, and it will at some point in the future, they will simply reverse what they were not part of when they were in the minority. And so the concept underlying the 60 votes instead of 51 votes is a good concept, and it's consistent with the way the Senate is supposed to be working, and kind of a more deliberative approach than what we have over in the House. They only have 100 people over there voting. We have 435. And so, and it only takes a bare majority in the House. So I do not want to see the filibuster abandoned or done away with.
Now, how much strain did this lengthy shutdown cause for yourself, for members of Congress, especially in relationships with people you have that are across the aisle?
There definitely was strain, and it took the form of people on the other side of the aisle blaming Republicans, and we Republicans blaming Democrats. I will simply say, when it comes to who's at fault, that I voted to keep the government open way back in mid-September, and the Democrats, almost every one of them, except I think for one in the House, voted to close it, voted not to pass the continuing resolution to keep the government open. So it's pretty clear in the House that the Democrats shut her down. They'll make arguments about why they shut it down, but there's no doubt about who shut it down, and that was where the Democrats that refused to vote for the what we call a clean, that's unencumbered with other issues, continuing resolution. So there was no poison pills hidden in it or anything of that nature. When it went to the Senate, it takes 60 votes, and 52 Republicans voted for it over 14 times, and all but three of the Democrats voted against it. So we were short 5 votes. And so say there was strain, there was great strain, because the Democrats had to be extraordinarily shrill in trying to explain why they were shutting down the government. And their reasons were interesting, but incorrect. I'll be nice. They have every opportunity now that we're reopened that they would have had 40 days ago, 45 days ago. And so, for goodness sakes, why did they put everybody through all of this? And so anyway, it's hard to be kind and nice when people are going hungry, and when people are being put at risk in the air, and when military is just barely getting paid. And I mean, it's not good. And when you're walking through the hallways here in the Capitol, and all the people providing security and everything else have to be here, they have to be working, and they're not getting paid, it's not very pleasant. They're not happy. And so, of course, you tend to look at the party on the other side and say, "What is? Come on, you guys." But anyway, we're open now, so that's the good news.
Of course, the Democrats' big concern related to the Obama health care subsidies. Will Speaker Johnson allow for some kind of vote, maybe some kind of compromise on this issue, so we don't find ourselves at this place again in January sometime?
Well, I don't know about the vote. I know that the Senate is going to vote, but when Speaker Johnson has been asked this exact question, he's always answered the same way, and that is, he's not the boss of most people here. He's going to hold meetings, and we'll have that first big meeting of our conference on Tuesday of this coming week. And we will be going through exactly that issue and others to try to decide how to handle it. When it comes to that issue, I'll just say that I don't know if the word fortunate is quite the right word, but I'm on the subcommittee on energy and commerce, the healthcare subcommittee that will be dealing with these issues. We met yesterday, just the Republican side of the committee, and went through different aspects of exactly those issues. And so I've been personally working on these literally for 10 months, trying to figure out how to properly approach this incredibly important issue. I break the issues down into access, affordability, lowering costs, addressing pharmaceuticals, and investing more in professionals. And each one of those has its own subset of issues. But these are the exact kind of things we were discussing yesterday. And those discussions will continue, I know, because I've seen a rough draft calendar in our committee and elsewhere. So, yeah, we're most assuredly going to be talking about health care.
What are some of your other priorities for the next week?
So the focus of the Natural Resource Committee, which I'm a member of, will be on probably – I hope that we'll see the Wolf bill that Lauren Boebert is bringing forward. It should be coming up next week, and hopefully will make its way out of committee. I'll certainly be voting for it. It delists the wolf from the Endangered Species Act nationwide. I have another bill somewhat similar, except instead of being a nationwide delisting bill, it's a state of Oregon, state of Washington wolf delisting bill. And it's going to be brought to the committee. Whether we'll have a hearing on it this week or not, I don't know. We also have a bill that I hope comes up this week, which I've introduced, to transfer 100 acres of Forest Service land up on the Columbia River. Well, it's some distance away, and we're wanting to get it passed for Wasco County and provide additional water. We're doing this because we can reduce dramatically the cost to the city of adding to the size of their reservoir. So I'm very, very hopeful for that. That bill should pass and should make its way to the floor. And we're working on other issues, of course, as you might guess, that have to do with the environment in that committee. On the energy and commerce, I understand that we may be taking up the NBA gambling issue that showed up there in Portland. I think we may have the head of the NBA coming in to talk to our subcommittee on commerce. And we'll also be talking about the NIL, the name, image, likeness issues, which, by the way, is in my opinion, unbalanced. It's a good bill. There's some good stuff in it. It's called SCORE Act, but it's unbalanced, and it's going to be far more beneficial to the University of Oregon than to Portland State or Oregon State or these other schools where kids are just as deserving. But they're not going to see the kind of money that they'll be seeing at other more equal schools, I'll call them.
Just about ready to wrap up. You've got to be breathing a sigh of relief of getting to this point for last night.
Well, that would be an understatement. And by the way, the reservoir is for the city of The Dalles. I didn't say that, but I'm trying to get through this committee this coming week. The new reservoir, but the or the larger reservoir. As far as being happy with it being open, I'm absolutely ecstatic, and it's not just because I told the clerk of the house to hold my pay during the entire shutdown, because there's no way that I should be getting paid when so many other people are not, and so I'm looking forward to Tuesday, but the fact of the matter is. People truly were in serious danger, particularly those that were very, very reliant on SNAP benefits. This is no joking matter. So when we got that passed last night, I'm extremely happy. Millions of people should be happy.
All right, that's our time for now. We'll check it again soon. From Washington, D.C., Congressman Cliff Benz, thanks for being on.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate it.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.